Okay. Where we were last left off, we had read, we did the, let's just do a little review so we know where we stand. We were in Eldad. Eldad is the second of the two kings. It's Eliphaz, Eldad, and Sophar. And that was chapter 8. I believe chapter 8, am I right? Yes. And essentially what he, just to do a quick review, first he accuses him of speaking so gruesomely to God, that is, about God, because he says God doesn't do anything unless, that is, there's no way God would twist justice. There's no way God would do something, how are you, good evening, that he didn't intend to do. And then he accuses his sons of sinning. If your sons are dead, it's because they sinned, which is pretty harsh. That's what I think it says. And that it says, if you pray to God and you're really pure, then you'll go free, which is also kind of critical because it's a big if there.
Yeah.
Big if. And then he said, and then he says, if it's true, then it's true that if it's true that you're pure, and what you need to do is A, be pure, B, pray to God nicely, and if you do that, even though you're having troubles now, in the end, good things will happen.
In the end.
In the end, or sometime later. They actually use the word achericha in your end.
This is his good friend.
This is his good friend, Sophar. Sophar? Yeah, Sophar. Bildad, sorry, Bildad.
Bildad. Okay. I think his friend is trying to justify his mind. Why all these things, bad things
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's right. He's trying to justify his own philosophy, which is exactly what annoys Eov. Now, let's take a look. Then in the following few psukim, he said, if you remember, Eliphaz's big trick was, I had a prophecy, and that's how I know what to tell you. And Bildad's thing is, we don't know anything ourselves because we're too young. You have to go to the Avot, to the ancestors, and hear their advice. If you hear their advice, then you'll know what to do. And he sets that up. This is, by the way, I think very, just a literary device, because each one has a different thing. Sophar goes to prophecy, Bildad goes to the ancients, if I'm not mistaken, the Bildad, sorry, Eliphaz goes to the prophets, or claims to be a prophet himself.
Yeah.
Bildad says go to the elders, and Sophar, if I'm not mistaken, will say use logic. That is, if you want to know what's going on, use Chachma, I believe. And that's, I think that's really because the author is being literary. He's sort of presenting the three ideas of where people get their information from. None of them satisfy, either you have logic, or you listen to what your Rebbe tells you, or you have some kind of prophetic vision. Good evening. None of them are going to satisfy Eov, and I believe that these three characters are constructs. Not only that, we're going to see that when we get to, God willing, tonight, Eov is going to respond to Bildad. We're in chapter 8, verse 10. Actually, verse 11. Chapter 10, chapter 8, verse 11. What we're going to see is, after Bildad comes out shooting, Eov is not going to respond to Bildad. He's going to respond to Eliphaz. Some of it. Some of it's going to be responded to Bildad. Some of it is going to go all the way back to the speech of Eliphaz. So you might have a question, which is why not, if it's a real conversation, then if Eliphaz spoke, then all the responses should be right afterwards. And the answer is it's not a real conversation. It's a well-constructed conversation. Eov, the author wanted Eov to say certain things in the first response. In the second response, he wants him to say certain different things. Some of those different things then go back to Eliphaz. Or you could just say in a normal conversation, I respond to you a little bit, and then I talk to you, and then I remember something I wanted to say to you. So
that
if you want
sense.
To, it's,
yeah.
that's also perfectly viable. It bothers some people that Eliphaz, that is, in a normal conversation, that would be fine. In a biblical book, in a Kodesh book, I would want things to be extremely neat. A, response to A. B, response to B. What I get is A, response a little bit of A, then B, response to A, then response to B. So how come it's all mixed up? So in one way you could say that's because the book was constructed that way. Another way, because you could say it actually details a reasonable conversation, whether real or not real, but a reasonable conversation. Whichever way, one should just be aware of the fact. Don't get upset that when Eov is speaking, he's referring back to Eliphaz. It's simply the way, for whatever reason, that's the way the book is constructed. There's no real, there's no making heads or tails out of it. I mean, there's no way to be sure about why the book is constructed that way, but it certainly is. So you have to be open to that idea. And now Bildad hits him with three mashals that look like two. So let's read those three mashals. Hayiged gomer below bitza, does the word ge'ah, like usually we think of it as haughtiness, does one grow? What it means is one gets swelled. Does a gomer, which is a reed, grow below bitza? Bitza is boats, mud. That is, does it grow without being planted? What it's talking about is a reed that's planted in the Nile River or various rivers. Those, I guess, I don't know what you call them. The
rushes.
Rushes, exactly right.
So marsh plain?
Yeah, like the rushes that grow marsh right plain. On the river, exactly right.
Marsh plain.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question is, so he says, listen, how you get gomer, that's a question. That's not a the, that's a question. You can tell it's a question because that he has a chataf patach under it, which is a sign for a question as opposed to a statement or a definite article. So does gomer grow without mud? Yiske achu vili mayim. Does an achu grow without mayim? Now the word sigoy, like sigoy hasegev, how do you think? So, or Hashem niskav biado. So the word segev is also to be raised up. Actually, that's Hashem niskav biado, but they're similar ideas. Achu, you'll probably recognize from the story of Yosef's dreams. Do you remember the animals came from the achu? If we go back to Bereishit, you'll see that the parot came from the achu. Ba'achu, exactly right. So achu were reeds that grew on the Nile. So he's saying, listen, gomer doesn't grow without boats, and achu doesn't grow without mayim. Odenu bi'ibo lo yikatef, don't cut it before it's ready. Now, it's a very nice word there, by the way. I don't know if we did this a little bit, but it's been a while, so I'll go over it. Bi'ibo comes from the word ba'aviv, which means in its springtime. Don't cut it off in its springtime, which means before it's fully developed. That is, right now, it's a young rush, and it looks like it has a life to it, but if you cut it off, there won't be anything left. You can tell that there's a missing bet because the first bet has a dot in it. Do you see that? That dot is called a dagesh chazak, and that indicates that there should be two bets there, but they got merged into one and lengthened.
Isn't that the ebo?
Yeah, the ebo, because normally it would be the evo with one, so because the two vavs became one, the two vets became one, so it gets hardened with the dot.
Would sort of be. It would have been. The ibbo.
That's correct. Although then it probably wouldn't soften to something like the eve bow or something.
Yeah, but
that doesn't sound too good. Yeah, but lifnei kol chatzir yivash. And if you take out, that is, if you cut these things off, they'll dry up. But lifnei kol chatzir, that is, if you rip it up before the time of harvesting comes, yivash, it will dry up. Cane. Now that cane always gets to the actual. This is called the mashal amritza, which is here's the mashal and the nimshal. Here is the simile and what it's actually referring to. So here he makes it easy for us. He actually describes it. Kain orchot kol shokhayel. That would be the way. This is what's going to happen to anybody who forgets God. The tikvat chaneif toved. And the line or the hope of the sinner will be destroyed. Here's a very clear mashal, by the way. What he's saying to him, it complements what he said before. You had a good life, things were going well for you. Now that things go bad, you run a risk. He's not even talking about his sin at this point. The sin that he's speaking about is not what Eov did or did not do, but by speaking out against God, right? Kol shokhei el, he's accusing Eov. The minute that he talks against God, he's accusing him of forgetting God, leaving his religion. And the minute you leave your religion, then for sure you won't get anything good. If you keep your feet planted, then eventually you'll come and you'll grow up. But if you take your feet out of the water, in this case the religious theological waters, then you will simply dry up. This is a pretty straightforward mashal. There's not, I think it's important to analyze it within the context of the Sefer so it doesn't get lost. What he's saying is he's focusing not on Eov's sin, but on Eov's current sin, which is accusing God or forgetting God. Now, Eov is not forgetting God. He is accusing God. He's not forgetting God. He's not becoming an atheist. He's becoming resentful. So the accusation is probably not fair, but certainly Bildad sees it in that way, that Eov essentially is pulling his feet out of the religious waters, and therefore he has no possibility of survival.
The mashal here, especially the last one about cutting something off before its time, implies that there is a time to harvest.
Yeah, it's a good question. The question is when. I would assume
if you follow the muscle through, then you know.
I assume he means that time is death. That is, go all the way to the end of your death. The last 5 minutes, if you win the lotto, that proves everything. I assume just because before he used the word "afrika."
Here is different.
Go ahead with the translation.
So it says here, can the rush shoot up without mire? Can the reed grass grow without water? Whilst it is yet in its greenness and not cut down, it withers before any herb.
Yeah, I don't think that's correct.
It's
odeno bi'ibo lo yikatev. It means while it is still in its aviv,
mm-hmm.
lo yikatev. Do not cut it down, or it should not be cut down.
Well, this says, and it's not cut down. In other words, this particular thing.
Why would it dry up if it didn't get cut down?
I guess maybe if it's growing without water. If you take away the water, then it. So here, if you leave the waters of your faith, you'll shrivel up and die.
It's possible. I don't think it changes necessarily the point of mashal. I see lo yikatef more as a stronger. Although yikatef is certainly passive. Yikatef is it should not be cut down. How did it translate that?
It leaves out the should. While it is, you know, even before it's cut down, if you remove the water or the mud, then it shrivels up.
Well, if they call chatzir yibash, if you move the water as opposed to cut it.
Well, it doesn't say if you remove the water.
Yes.
I mean, it says before it's cut.
Yes, I see.
The implication is if it's not in its water or its mire, then it dries up.
Yeah, that's possible. I see the mushroom.
Even more so than any other random herb that grows, I guess, in the ground.
Right, but in that case, the idea of cutting it off before its time doesn't exist. I think I prefer my translation. I think it's a more powerful statement that you're actually, because it makes it very active. It's not that, it's literally that he's cutting himself off by the roots rather than he's just drying up the water. But I suppose it works either way. Now, the next pasuk is a little confusing because it looks like it's a continuation. It has the word asher. Now, asher is usually a relative cause. For instance, I think, therefore I am. Ani choshev ba'asher ani. The word asher usually describes a that or a which or a whom. Here you have to be careful. It doesn't. Because if you try to do so, and there are certainly those who try to do so, asher yakot kislo ubeit achavish mirtako. So we mentioned the word yakot. It was a big machloket. Oh, we actually did this. So let me go through it a little bit quicker. The yakot, according to most Mefarshim is some kind of cutting down. Asher yakot kislo. How does the English translate? How do we have it in English?
Whose conference is gossamer and whose thrust is a spider web.
Yeah, that's actually a little bit better. Yakot looks a little bit like a verb, right? Yakot. But it's because it has the yud of masculine there. But it's not. Gossamer is probably correct. If you remember, Rashi actually brought up that idea. Eben Ezra brought up that idea and he mentioned that he heard it from Sfasajigon. Rav Sajigon says the word yakot comes from the word rays of light, like when a ray of light comes to the window and there's a little bit of that dust thing. That's, I think, even though the Eben Ezra rejects that translation, I think that's the correct translation because then it's parallel to the word beit achavish. Beit achavish is a spider web, right? Beit achavish. So what he's saying is somebody relies on a spider web. Asher yakot kislo. If his faith, here the word kesel doesn't mean, we've seen that before. Kesel could be foolishness, but it also means belief, faith. So if one's faith is a gossamer or is the light of the sun, ubeit achavish mirtacho yisha'en al beito velo yamod. He'll lie on his house, which is either the gossamer or the spider web, and it will not stand. That is, it'll fall apart. Yachazik bo, he'll grab it velo yakum. Do you see how that reads much better than looking as yakot as a verb? Do you have yakot as a verb there? How does the English read there?
The hypocrite's hope shall perish, whose hope
right.
shall be cut off, whose trust shall be a spider's web.
Yeah, that's
he shall lean upon his house, but it shall not stand. He shall hold it fast, but it shall not endure.
I like it the other way. That is, this is a new idea, and the reason why you have to identify this as a new mashal is that it has nothing to do with the previous mashal.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally separate. This is a new idea that he's accusing of, which is asher yakot kislo. He who relies on gossamer threads, ubeit akabish mitzacho, he's going to go to rely on it, and it won't stand up for him. Now he's actually turning towards the actual words that Eov is saying, and he's saying, you're building a spider web of philosophy, of your belief of how God works and how God doesn't work. And because it's so unsubstantial, therefore it falls apart. So to my mind, this is not an extension of the same parallel about the, in many cases, that probably reads that, you know, this is sort of a continuation of the story about cutting down the reeds. But I don't think so. The reeds have to do with forgetting about God. And now, what do you replace with your forgetting of God? Some other philosophy that you create. That philosophy is invalid. And the minute that you try to rely on it, it simply won't stand up. So I believe that's a separate idea. Now let's get to the weird part. This is new territory. Ratov hu lefnei shanish. See, the hard part about Bildad's speech is he goes into these mashals without telling you that he's starting a new one. Ratov hu lefnei shemesh. It is wet or moist. That's actually a modern Hebrew word, right? Ratuv. We use that all the time. Even though I believe this is the only place it appears, only in Iyov does it appear in Tanakh. So it became a very popular word, although it was a very unpopular word back in biblical times. It's probably not originally Hebrew. It's probably Aramaic or Akkadian. I'm not sure where the word comes from. Ratov hu lifnei shemesh, va'al gan nato yonakto teitze. And now I'm going to translate and let's see what we can make out of it. We can understand the picture. The question is, what the heck is he talking about? What is he referring to? Ratov hu lifnei shemesh. It is moist before the sun. The al gan nato, gina is a garden, and into its garden yonakto teitze, its saplings yonakto from the word yaneket. Probably here it's referring to its roots or the things where it draws in sustenance. Shoots yonakto teitze, al gal shorashav yusubahu, on a mountain al gal. Shorashav yusubahu, on a gal is like a bunch of stones. Evan, like a galim are a series of stones. What? Like Gilgal, shagalu kol mitzrayim alai, and also gal avanim. Exactly right. So gal can mean to roll over, but I think the original word comes from stone. So on a stone, its root shorashav yusubahu. Now svach is covering. That is, here's the image. Here's the stone, here's the gal, or whatever the mound is, and it sends its roots over the gal, not sure why, Beit Avanim Yechezeh, a house of stones it will see. Again, let's just continue on and see what we would do with it. Im Yivalenu Mimkomo, if it becomes destroyed from its place, or if it's sort of absorbed or taken out of its location, V'chichesh Bo, and it is sort of subverted, lo re'iticha, you will not see it. Hein hu mesos darko, it is the glory of its path, u'me'afar acher yitzmachu, and it will grow from different dirt. And now we have the hein el lo yamas tam, so now we're talking about God again, so we're adding the mashal. What is going on here? First of all, what kind of thing do you see? I see the thing clearly. The question is, what kind of thing do you see? What is the item that he is? What's the key element in this muscle? Rock. What? Stone. Oh, I would have said it was not
thing growing.
The stuff, but the roots of a tree. Right. I that's my guess, because plants really wouldn't have enough to send their roots over a stone. I'm thinking a tree or some kind of large plant that plowed its saplings or its roots into the ground that it was in, into the gina. For some reason, it grew over the stones that were there. What?
Could be vines.
And then it did something. It saw something about a house of stones. And now, if it is taken out of its place and you won't see it, it doesn't. It's happy. It's right, like masos, like masos.
You know,
and
I don't see it that way at all. I'm
what do you
sorry.
See? Go ahead,
I see this plant.
Yeah.
Instead of putting its roots down into the ground where it will hold it fast.
Right.
It puts them over these stones, which are not held fast.
Right.
And it can, you know, they can either be pushed away and then it's gone. It doesn't have anything to hold it. Doesn't have a way to get nutrition.
Right.
And in fact, if you pull it away from that, you can pull it away and you'll never know it was there. If it had put its roots into the ground, at least if you managed to pull it away, you would leave a hole. And there would have been some mark that it would have been there.
I'm good with that. That makes sense to me, except for Pasuk Yutet. Hein hu mesos darko. Behold, this is the glory of the happiness. Mesos, like sisu v'simcho. Hein hu mesos darko. It is the happiness of its path. U'me'afar acher, and from another dirt, yitzmachu, it will grow. Is that good news or bad news? Is that a positive or a negative? And by the way, there's a problem with the trope here. Does anybody have the trope on their things? There's two ways to read this pasuk. Umeafar, from dirt, acher yitzmachu, which means another one will grow. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be meafar acher yitzmachu, from different dirt, the same, whatever it was, plant tree will grow. One seems rather positive, one seems rather negative. The trope, by the way, puts a break on the word afar. So it says, umeafar, from dirt, stop, another one will grow. But you have to be careful with trope when it comes to songs. These psukim are so short that it's hard to put the trope in the right place, and you have to be very careful. If you're learning Pesukim in Chumash, then really you rely on the trope, and then there's a big machloket about whether that's the Masoretes, whether that was a papyrus that was invented by the Masoretes, or whether they were just carrying on the Kabbalah. But when it comes to the Sifrei Emet, these are Sifrei Emet, which is Iyov, Mishlei, and Tehillim, there's a whole different trope. We don't have the tunes anymore. We know something about them, but you have to be careful when it comes to poetry on how to use the trope. In fact, let me go to the English. That last line, read me verse 19. Let's see how it comes out, happy or sad.
Behold, this is the joy of his way.
Yeah.
And out of the earth shall others spring. I think that works.
What?
I think because out of the earth...
Whose joy?
Well, the joy is a little bit of a problem. let's put that aside for a minute. But plants will grow out of the earth.
Right. So you say, even though this guy, so what's the muscle? You're not planting. So this is an extension of the previous muscles. You're not planting your roots in the right place. They're scattering. They're climbing over stones, but they're not digging in. And when you're gone, there'll be somebody else to take over where you are. I'm perfectly fine with that, except for the one little problem, which is
Ehumasos.gov. All right. So could it be? Yeah.
The image in my mind, although it doesn't really go with the roots, is it could be lichen. You know, lichen forms on rocks, and then when it dies, it actually forms the soil, and over time, it produces enough soil that actual plants can grow.
You focus on the rocks?
The focus is sort of just the life cycle of I guess, a more primitive plant. More advanced plants.
Yeah, but
grow.
When it does die, it leaves a mark because it makes the soil. Yeah.
Now let's, by the way, if you're, now before we even figure out exactly what's happening here, we'll go back. I want you to just read the Nimshal. That is, what's the punchline? By the way, when we get back to reality in Pasuk Chav, Ein El Lo Yamas Tam, God will not treat badly from the word Ma'os, it's disgusting. He will not treat with disgust the pure, the non-sinner. And he will not support the hands of the enemies. Well, God, now fit that into the mashal.
All right, but it does, because the innocent is the plant that grows after.
Is the plant that grows afterwards,
right.
And the uninnocent is the first tree that was ripped out because it didn't put its roots down.
Right, so now this is the joy of his way. It could be, tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
This is, you know, he wanted to put his roots over the stones.
Okay.
He was being stubborn and went his own way.
Okay.
Or it could be, this is the, you know, the glory of the way Hashem does things. You know, you put it in the roots, you put your roots in the dirt, and it grows. You don't, and you're dead. You know, that's just the way it works.
Just the way it is. So you're gonna find down the soul slope.
I think it's
anybody else?
Well,
any other Englishes, by the way? Any other Englishes that'll help us out? I'll take... That's true. We haven't really introduced too much else except the fact that somebody else will come back where you didn't. That's really the only new thing.
Well,
when you go, there'll be somebody else to take over. That's a small addition, an addition nonetheless.
Also, because here the plant is contrarily
God
deciding where it's going to put it
through. Away in
well, I'm sorry, read the English?
Behold, God will not cast away an innocent man.
Right.
Neither will he uphold the evil.
Right. So the Nimshal is fine. I understand the Nimshal, it's the muscle I'm having a hard time with. What is the English, do you want to read the English muscle there and see what it does with it, or? Starting from verse 16.
16?
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what the English does with this.
He is green before the sun, and his shoots go forth over his garden.
Is that positive, or, so you're saying that's negative then? Because if it's a negative muscle, then that's negative also. I don't know. Is that a good thing to be green before the sun? That's normally good.
Yes.
Well,
green is the result of the sun.
Mm. But you have comments? Yeah, I would have thought that's a positive thing. Go ahead.
It says Bilgad introduces a new simile.
Go ahead.
A comparison with a plant thriving and firmly rooted, but destroyed and forgotten by the very soil on which it had flourished.
Huh.
That's what his commentary is on 16.
How does that
on
help?
That
though?
One.
So wait. So they. Have, so it's a positive thing, but tough luck anyway because the soil will forget you anyway. That goes. That seems to go against what Bilbao's trying to say.
But
what Bilbao's trying to say is eventually things will work out well for you. Not that God forgets you completely, but you just have to wait, be patient, everything balances out. That I don't have a problem with that, except for the fact that it doesn't seem to agree with the original philosophies of Bill Dunn himself.
Telling you what he said.
Well, everybody's struggling with this. You can see there's a struggle here. I'm going to give you two interpretations, some of which will. Let me read them for you, because it's just simply very difficult. And this, it's interesting. The Targum, the Gemara talks about Rabbi Gamliel was sitting around and he found a Targum of Yonah of Eov, and he was so unhappy with it that he had it banned. This is going back to the year 100. This has been causing problems. The Septuagint, the Greek translation of the year, probably done about the year 100 of the Common Era, the Septuagint of the Bible being done 200 years before the Common Era, the Septuagint of Eov probably done about 100 of the Common Era, also a mess, complete mess. The words has no real instructional value. There's even the readers who are around in the year 200 BC, in the year 100 BC, they simply did not always know what to make with this. And we're talking about Chazal. Chazal themselves didn't always know what to make of this sefer. It's got to be the hardest sefer in Tanakh. But anyway, let me try Rashi, because Rashi certainly makes something out of it, but I don't know if we'll be satisfied with it. What pasuk does it start in? Tezayin? Yeah. I'm just going to read through Rashi and let Rashi talk for himself, if that's okay with you. Tezayin Rashi, Ratuvu Lach. So Rashi doesn't say green. Rashi says wet, which is our modern understanding of the word ratuv. So I think I prefer that better than green. But what it means is something that's able to bear the heat of the sun. I think that's a positive thing either way. V'chazach lach v'chazach mazalo terem bayilav eit kudat makat chomo hamiyavshoto. That is, it was wet. Ratov hu means lifnei shamesh. What that doesn't mean is, that's doing is amazing. It doesn't mean in the face of the sun. It means before the sun. When you were there, you were nice and wet. There was no sun. The sun comes out, whoosh, you dry away. And Rashi admits, by the way, that he says, ulefisha dimahu biguma medaber lefi anyan. He already started the muscle about the reed, so he's going to continue on in the same vein. So Rashi is absolutely clear. Is this positive, negative? And not only that, he takes the first pasuk, he solves the whole problem. How do I take the first pasuk? It's not positive. It doesn't mean he stands wet against the sun. Lifnei doesn't mean, like, there's two different ways to understand lifnei. Ani amati lifnei aish, could mean I stood in front of, or it could mean I stood before in time. It could be temporal, or it could be locational, locative, or temporal. Right? Locative, location, spatial. What? Spatial? Yeah, that's better. I think locative may be a grammar word, but I think I like spatial better. It could be spatial or temporal. So here, Rashi says clearly that it's temporal, and that solves the whole problem. Yeah, you were doing good until the sun came out, and then you weren't so good. Let me continue on with Rashi. Va'al ganato yonotar teitze, and then your shoots will go out. Yonato shorish hayonek, that is the roots of the nurser. O anaf hayalda hagadel b'shanazu kamo meroshon katol katef. He doesn't really deal with it. He just explains that it's small roots. What does he say? He says, Yisabhu yitachzu ba'anaf v'sovech. It grabs, it had a shielding, and it grabbed, it stretched out its roots, and it grabbed onto the shielding, like a vine, like a kudzu. That's what I'm picturing this situation. Beit avanim, yechazem makom eitan ro'er u'bonelo v'mtsuda. Umenachem, Yechazer Lashon Gvul. So he says, Yechazer, I gotta tell you, I'm not sure what Rashi's doing with this. Yechazer, he says, a Lashon Gvul.
Which means, I think it's.
That's correct. The stones were supposed to keep it inside. That's correct. And now let's go ahead with Yudchet. Ukiyivleenu minkomo han niframi menu, umikra chaseru, zeki chesbo, mikomo, lo retisha, when this guy is taken out, I think because it was stretching its roots out as opposed to in, it was relying on this house that didn't exist. What he's doing is, I think Rashi is taking the previous two muscles, one is of the goma and the other one is the house, and he combines them all together. He says this thing was growing around and it used this house, it stretched its roots into this house to hold on tight and to use as its shade. But eventually, when there weren't no house, there was nothing but sun. It dried up, and then he says, "Lo shorish v'lo anaf, v'hari hu kala." and it's completely destroyed. She'ein nefilato k'mapalat tzadikim, because this guy doesn't fall like a tzadik falls. Ki atzadik yipol v'yakum. When a tzadik falls, he stands up. But this guy, v'zeh yipol b'lot k'ma. This guy, he describes here, will fall down with no chance to get up. Now, what does Rashi do with heimasos.co? Because that, why does he say that is the pleasure of its ways? Shol rasha. Though that's the pleasure of a rasha. That's how the rasha likes it. Why? Shekol mesoso v'gam hatzlachato l'lo tikva chashuv. A rasha's pleasure is the fact that he knows he's going to, sort of like his hidden desire. You follow? Rasha really wants. By the way, it reminds me of a Gemara in Sanhedrin, a very interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin. Let me read it to you. I think it's worth the time, and maybe this is what Rashi is intending to. It's a very interesting mishnah by Sorah and Morah. Sorah and Morah is one of those weirder halachot, because Sorah and Morah gets punished for something he has not yet done. It's like, anybody ever seen Minority Report? It's like Minority Report. You get punished for something that you have not done. So I'll read to you what the mishnah says in Sanhedrin about Ben Sorah and Morah. It has this long thing about how Ben Sorah and Morah really wants to die, or really wants to be off. So it says like this. Just a second. Here it is. Sora Mora says, Ben Sora Mora nidon al shame sofo. He gets punished for what's going to happen, not what he's done yet. Yamut zakai va'al yamut chayav. Let him die as a clean person, not as a sinner. And this brings up all kinds of theological implications, although before it seems too harsh. Everybody, the idea of Ben Sora Mora is very difficult, because generally speaking, in Minority Report, and I think in most people's minds, you don't punish people for what they have not done. Judaism doesn't punish thought crime. But it's interesting, what everybody understands is Din Rodef. If I'm chasing Kasper Shalom, if somebody's chasing after another person to kill them with a knife, so it's clear that there's a Din Rodef and the guy's Chayiv Mitzvah, you're supposed to kill him. But he could have slipped, right? I mean, he could have changed his mind. That is, at what point are you a Din Rodef? And there are probably halakha ramifications. But even if I'm a minute away from stabbing somebody, chas v'shalom, the knife could slip. So in this essence, the fact that I'm being killed for something I have not yet done. Right?
You're being killed so that you don't...
chasing in itself, chayimita.
No, you're not chayimita just for chasing somebody. You're chayimita to that's certainly not how the Mishnah said. The Mishnah understands that you are chayimita for what you are about to do. What? For the intent. Or for the assumed outcome of your acts. And it makes sense to us. That is, we're not chasing, I'm chasing after somebody just to scare them. Theoretically, I shouldn't be chayav din rodef. Somehow I can know objectively that, I won't pull the trigger. Like if I'm running after somebody with blanks or something like that. So there's no din rodef. It's not just the fact that I'm chasing after somebody and scaring them. It's the fact that the end result will be death. So in din rodef, I think most people that you ask on the street will say, yeah, you punish somebody for what he's not yet done, because it's easy to prove that there's no guarantee that it will take place. Like Ben Sora Mora, what's that? Somebody else could get involved also, though. Somebody else, if a beit din is sitting, I don't know, let's say a beit din is floating in air, they're allowed to kill him also. It doesn't have to be just the person being chased. I'm sorry, what is that?
You care more about the guy who's trying to get killed.
Right. That's true, but for all I know, the guy's life who's being chased is perfectly safe. I can't know for sure. There's no way to be absolute. If somebody commits a murder, I could punish him for that murder because it took place. It's a fait accompli. But if I'm chasing after somebody who's not yet died, I can't guarantee 1,000%. What you're saying is you're taking a measurement. I weigh the probability versus the probability, but you're still punishing somebody for something they haven't done. And that's certainly the way the Gemara, the Mishnah certainly understands it in those terms. And I think that's, ultimately, you can't get out of it, you can't stop yourself from, you still get into that thing where it has not happened. You're still punishing somebody. You should give yourself a gzar din mavet. He hasn't done anything.
In more innocent times...
That's correct. You don't. But there are other things that you... That's correct. And what's interesting is if you... I could read you the dinim. I don't want to... Some of them are pretty nasty. there is a very small set of things that you kill somebody for, something they haven't done yet. I think I prefer not to go into them right now, but just analyze. And not only that, it says not for Avodah Zarah right here. And that's where you start to get into the whole philosophy of halakha. You start to say, why not Avodah Zarah, which is one of the big three, but something else? The question is, what about adultery? And there's some other issues going on. It's interesting. If you get a chance, Parachet and Sanhedrin, it's the last mission. It's worth a look. Very philosophical.
Is that individual Avodah Zarah, or someone trying to get others to
do it? No, any. It doesn't make a difference. You're not allowed to kill them. I'd rather not. It's, you know, we're mixed company. There's some pretty nasty stuff in here that you're allowed to kill people for, and it's very limited. But you really have to think about why some yes and why some no, according to our Torah Shabbat Peh. But nonetheless, getting back to where we were. So what Rashi? Oh, and then the Mishnah goes on. I'm sorry, I took a sidetrack just because it's such a fascinating Gemara, really. And of course, the Minhag report, it comes out the Paskins, you know, against. The Minhag report postulates against the Mishnah. It says that if you're even guaranteed that somebody's going to commit a murder, you're not allowed to put them away. So, what's that? But here too, I don't think there's a difference there. The question is, at what point does the probability, does it become a guarantee? How close? Calculus. At what point does the limit get so close to the line that it's, you know, no longer an issue? So theoretically, you can never really completely get to the line after he's gotten the line, so he's a murderer. There's nothing to talk about. At what point in your limits are you close enough that you now punish him for something that he hasn't done? It's a fascinating. You put the whole thing together, the whole mathematical concept. It's very, very interesting stuff. Let me read the Mishnah, by the way. So it says like this. So here's what Ibn Rashi is hinting at, and maybe it has something here. Ben Soramor Nidin Al Shem Sofo. Yamut zakai v'lo yamut chayav. Shemita tan shor rishayim hanah lehem. Because when it's a benefit to a rasha to be killed. Why? Because then he goes down zakai and he goes to shamayim as opposed to not.
That's what I remember learning, that that's why he's killed, so that he'll die innocent
That's correct, but you're
guilty.
Assuming that,
yes,
for sure he's going to be guilty,
yes.
Even though you don't know
for
sure.
Well, but he's such a bad person that's
going to... It's still a brain teaser.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a theological brain teaser. The hanala olam, and of course the benefit for everybody. With tzadikim ralahem, the rala olam. I'm sorry. With tzadikim, a tzadik who dies is ralahem rala olam. Yayim v'shein al rishayim hanalahem. It's good if they're sleeping or they're drunk, because then they're not hurting anybody. It's hanah to them. This is the idea where really a rasha, secretly, inwardly, he wants to be ripped out, because that's really what he's shooting. Anybody who's a rasha knows that he's being so destructive to the world and the world around him that really he just wants to throw his life away anyway. So I believe that's what Rashi's doing here. I'll just read Rashi again. Bring us back to how are we doing on time. Bring us back to Eov. So he says like this, who haim sosako, shall Russia, shakol misoso, that all of his pleasure, and here I point to Ben Soramar, all of Hana, gam hatzlachato lo tikvata, tashuv. There's no hope in anything that he does. Umeachar acher yitzmachu, bnei adam shahayu ad heina, sachim ad afar yitzmachu. Which means other people who have been waiting in the place while they couldn't grow because the Russia was there. Those other people will grow. So Rashi goes with the Tamim. Ume Afar, that is from the Afar that was just vacated by the dead, by the dead Rasha. Acher Yitzmach. There's only one problem with this. There's only one problem with this, which I think is a significant problem. The Goma was talking about a Rasha or a Tzadik. The whole Goma thing, the Reeds guy, the one who was being cut off before his time and he forgot about God. I think that was pretty clearly a Rasha, right? The second one was a guy who tries to hold on to gossamer or to light or to whatever, and his whole house falls apart. That's also Rasha, right? Here, if we understand it's like Rashi, it's also Rasha. Now take a look at Pasuk Chaf. What's the problem with Pasuk Chaf? Whenever you have a mashal, you have a nimshal. Wherever you have a nimshal, you have to have a mashal. So the Rasha exists in Pasuk Chaf. Where's the Rasha? Lo yachazik biyad mreim. The evil won't be supported. The only problem is, what's wrong with the first half of the Pasuk? Hain el lo yimash tam, and therefore I will show you that God will not forget the righteous. There's no righteous in this mashal, not in any three of them. Oh, just that one. You're right. That's correct. Yeah. Okay. So I'm sure that's what Rashi would say. It's a little unbalanced, though. It's a little unbalanced, which means that, and I believe there's another way to interpret this. So I'll read to you what Amos Chacham does, a modern interpretation. So he translates it differently. He says like this. Al gal shorashav yisubachu, which means that it's And Rashi, by the way, says that it's Shorashav reached to the Svach. So it says, so Amos Chacham translates this differently. Klomar, Shorashav Enum Netzarim B'yad Hitpashvut Al Yidei Galso Avanim. It has such strong Shorashim that when it gets to a mountain of stone, when it gets to a big rock of stone, not only on top of the ground, but built into the ground, like a boulder, so what do the roots do? They climb the stone, and they continue shooting root. And I think if you think of a tree, you'll realize that that's exactly what happens. A good, strong vine doesn't stop when it hits an obstacle. It continues. What it means, Yisubahu, doesn't mean that it's going up with Svach like Rashi, but it means that it, the vine, is Yisubahu. It goes over this gal and goes into the ground in another place. And then he continues like this, Ubeid Avanim Yechazeh, Lo Rak Shebo Yesh Revach Ben Evan, not only in places where you're just talking about a gal, Elagam Bayit, even if it's next to a house of stone, the roots will climb up, or they will crack apart the stone and dig in nonetheless. It's a tzaddik. Stefani is a tzaddik. So what he's saying is, the first two, according to Rashi, it's pretty clear what's going on. It's an extension of the previous mashalim, the guys of Rasha, and we should describe it pretty much like Ant did. If you want to say that this is the tam in the mashal, what this means is, if you're the type of guy who holds on to gossamer, then you have nothing to rely on. But if you're a guy with roots, see, this is against, remember the Gomed, this is not in agreement with the Gomed, like Rashi said, but it's in opposition to the Gomed. The Gomed essentially has nothing. You cut it off, it's not there. But a tree hits something that it's not happy with, and it has such strong roots that are, the problem with the Gomed is that it was being removed from the source of nourishment. As opposed to this tree where when it's removed from the source of the nourishment, it will actually jump over the obstacle to go into the source. What do you have to say in this case? Hein hu misolstarko, because that's the way it gets things done. And me'afar acher yitzmachu. Even it's got such good roots that if you dig up the tree and you bury it into a different ground, it's satisfactory there as well. That is, it's not, its roots are so powerful and so adaptive that it can jump, it'll crack through stone, and if you pull it out, it's happy. Put it into a different piece of dirt and it'll go back in. Which is right? Hard to say. I prefer the second one just because since the Nimshal has both the Tom balanced against the Rasha, I'd like to see the Tom getting some action as opposed to just that one word, Acher. Also, since the Goma was described as having no roots, I like the idea of the Tzaddik having super roots, and I think that's a powerful counteraction. But both are viable interpretations. Neither one kills the story, and I think that his point is well made either way. Yeah.
Had a few questions similar to our concept that we were discussing with Ben Shogamara, that he's saying some of you questions God, the Shofayel, Pascal Yakovet. Has he done anything wrong physically? Has he, besides just thinking, thoughts against God, where is that? Why is he being punished? Accordingly to this theology, this view of Bilgad, you're punished just thinking.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't. Bilbao is still having the same problem the other ones did. They can't find his sin. If you can't find his sin, but your theology tells you that people only get punished when you're guilty of something, so you got to come up with something else. And in this case, he creates a thought crime. You're absolutely right. In fact, let's take a look at the last few psukim. He backs off that thought crime idea a little bit in the last few psukim, and then we'll probably stop there. I'm sorry we didn't get to Eo's response. Ad yimalei schok picha, and by the way, he's quoting Tehillim here, which Eo always does, always quotes Tehillim, but then he twisted it a little bit, but since we're in Bilbao, he's quoting to him directly. Adi malei schok picha usvatecha tua, and your lips will sound out of happiness. Sonecha yilbishu boshet, your haters, people who hate you, they will wear shame. The oel reshaim einenu, and I could tell you that the tent of sinners will no longer exist. Ouch. Do you follow? If you take a look, just to show you an example, if you look at the end of Eliphaz's speech, Eliphaz did not end his speech with the idea of a Russia. So if you go back to Perek Hay, I believe. He ends off very positive. Tavo b'chelach ale kever. You will come in your own good time. You will grow in your own time. Ka'alot k'dish b'to. So you don't have it now, but eventually things will grow in their own good time. You just be patient. Hine zoha kanuka in hu. I checked it. It's true. Shema enu v'atad dalach. And you should know that it's not... that it's going to work out. As opposed to Bildad. Bildad says, you should know that the tent of a sinner no longer exists. So Bildad is, of course, much, much sharper than Eliphaz. And they're starting to actually accuse him of actual sin, even though they can't put their hand in. Or it could be right. It could be the sin he's accusing him of is doubting God. Is doubting God, which is enough sin for Bildad to be happy. It doesn't make a difference what you did with life. If you doubt God, you go, you know, you go to the lowest level of hell, so to speak.
It's so funny. Apparently, you have two friends, and you haven't met the third friend yet.
Right.
And the first two are spoken. He has, you know, the ring with the person who starts off the conversation. And he actually has his lackey of sorts.
Yes, it's
and
true.
And Bildad doesn't have such a huge conversation, but, you know, speaks and has a parrot. And he likes to jab it. He seems to be more of a jabber. And following on the back of the first speaker.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Wait till you see so far, it's like five sentences. Yeah, so far he's got nothing to say. For exactly your point, Eliphaz is really the leader of the gang. The other two are very much considered lackeys. Why the Navi decides to create two more people when perhaps... why would the Navi... Assuming it's not an actual story of something that happened, which I think Chazal are pretty sure that it didn't, you know, word for word didn't take place. Yeah, I mean, if you say it did, it did, so then it's no problem. But if you say it's a construct, why not the author go with one person? Why not just have an Eliphaz? Here I wanted to say that each one represents a different kind of philosophy. One is philosophy that I have received from on high, another one that I've asked my father, he told me what to do, and the third one I figured it out for myself. But otherwise, sometimes you look at these three speeches, it's hard to really distinguish them. It's really hard to sometimes say... What? Does he? I see. It's been a while since I read the Rambam, and there's no more Nebuchadnezzar here, which I brought... which I photocopied, forgot to bring, because I thought he said that actually the philosophies, it could be that they represent different philosophies, but he does mention Eliphaz seems to be sort of subsuming the other characters. If you don't believe that, I'll look it up and I'll look up, it's in his Moran Vulcan, I'll look up and see what he said, because I had the opposite impression that I could have learned it wrong, not that they represent three philosophies, but really that they're more or less the same philosophy.
I was
going
to go to a play, and what I want to enjoy is a play with two characters on the stage. Sort of boring.
Yes, yeah.
I would want somebody else to come in.
That's true, absolutely. And not only that, we even presented the idea everything is repeated twice. That's what's called, these things used to be done in plays. They still are, by the way, in Iran, you should know, they still have these ancient plays where sometimes people get played in them because somebody represents the god of, you know, the one who's giving all the sustenance, another one represents the evil forces, and the people actually throw rocks. It's a big thing. They have this a little bit in the theater, in Kabuki theater a little bit, where you get in Japan, where these people really they dress up as the evil, the devil, and people really boo at them, and they really get involved in the whole thing. You're right, this is actually done as an epic. It's absolutely an epic. There's no doubt in my mind it was performed. We actually have ancient documents from earlier Canaanite mythology, that is, predating this by 400 or 500 years, well, there's actually director's notes, believe it or not. Like, you dig up these ancient stones, they have all these things about how this god came in and he yelled at that god, and they pulled this god's hair, and then they did that, and did that, and then there's actually the line for the director which says, please repeat this, the chorus, repeat this 7 times. It's fascinating, actually. So I agree, I believe the oath was done as an act, and it could be that it simply had the, you know, one of the goals is to have these words sink in, and the way you do that is by not boring your audience. So, you know, to say that, though, you want to be... People are very cautious about saying that when it comes to a Sefer Kodesh, because they want every word and every single thing to be, you know, exactly perfect. But this is Sefer Kodesh. It's true. It's also in Ketuvim, and there's no reason why God can't ask a Navi to be a little creative. So, you know, I don't find a problem with that difficulty, although I imagine some people might, looking at it as a play. But I believe that, in fact, it is a play. Okay, I think we pretty much... We have 5 minutes left. Yeah, I want to show you, actually, if we just take a look, just to give you a little bit of a say, and then I'll talk about what we're going to do later. If you take a look at Perek Tet, first of all, I'll show you that he's responding to Eliphaz. Take a look at Perek Tet Pasuk Yud Aleph. Chapter 9, verse 11. He's talking about God. Hein yavor alai, God will cross over me. V'lo ereh, I will not see him. V'yachalof, and he will float by. V'lo avim lo, and I cannot understand it. How do I know there's a response to Eliphaz? Because if you go back to Eliphaz's speech, if you hold your place and go back to Eliphaz's speech, you remember this? When Eliphaz first introduced his prophecy, this is in chapter 5. Sorry, I know I'm jumping around a little. Look at chapter 4. verse 12. Chapter 4, verse 12. This is Eliphaz's first speech where he says that he heard all of his wisdom and prophecy. It says, Ve'elai davar yugunav, a word was stolen to me. Vatikachos nai shemetzmin, who I managed to hear a little bit of it. I managed to see a little bit of it. V'shifim b'cheshinot laila, when I was having visions at night, then fol tar de'imal on Hashem, when the blackness fell on people, pachai kra'ani radai, I was really scared, v'rovas matai yachida, I was shaking, v'ruach al panai yachalof, there was a spirit that over my face drifted, you see that word, yachalof? T'samer sarat b'sari, and it made the hair stand up like nails. Yamod v'lo akir mareyu, I saw him, but I couldn't tell exactly what the vision was. T'muna v'neged anai, I saw some kind of shape. Dimama v'kol eshman, like Eliyahu says, I heard a small, silent voice. He's talking about a theophany. God speaks to him. Look at Eov making fun of Eliphaz, because Eliphaz is saying, I heard all this thing with prophecy. Now Eov is a pretty big guy, right? Eov is considered a prophet also, I mean, that level. So what does he say? Hein yavor alai, when he crosses over me, lower I don't see a thing. Yachalof lo avim lo, when he passes over me, I don't know what you're tuning into, but I ain't tuning into the same thing. So I'll show you how this makes sense in his philosophy. He's saying that God is so great he can't understand him. And here's where Eov, while he's criticizing God, admits God's greatness. But he's also taking a pot shot at Eliphaz. You're so great, you think God's talking to you? I don't know, I've been around for a long time, God never just said a word to me. I'm sitting around, I got no comunicado.
Well,
so I think that's
a very normal kind of conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, people would talk, if somebody tells you that God's telling them this and that and the next thing, your reaction might be, oh, God's talking to you, he didn't talk to me that way.
That's exactly what he's doing.
You would react that way because we're not accustomed to people who are talking with God.
Right, and even back then, not everybody spoke with God.
No,
we have
well,
Sefer
Devarim,
so it looks like everybody talked with God, but it's
not
the case.
No, those are the only people we study, the ones that talk to God.
Right, and I think it's beautiful the way Eov is he's going to criticize God harshly, but he's also taking a shot at it. It's just so well written. He grabs those words to take a shot at Eliphaz. So just to read the first two of them, and then we'll stop up at paragraph 9. Omnam yadati chichem. I know that, like, you know what Omnam Yodati Chichein means? This is chapter 9, verse 1. Omnam Yodati Chichein, in modern Hebrew, in modern English, that's a D, what I call in my classrooms a D-U-H, that's a duh. You say duh. Omnam Yodati Chichein. You don't think I know that? That's another way to say that. How does English translate Omnam Yodati Chichein?
Of a truth,
no,
I know that it is so.
Yeah, but it's stronger. It's saying, I know that you're right. You're not, like, we're not even communicating. It's like waiting for Godot, they're not even talking to each other. It's like, sometimes, what do you think, I'm stupid? I don't, and look, Umayit Dak and No Shimel. I know God does tzedek. And I also know that man doesn't have a chance next to God. That's a common, remember Eliphaz said, don't, right after his little prophecy speech, don't think that you're so pure because anybody standing next to God is not so pure. He says, you think I don't know that? Im Yachvot Shlarivi Mo, Lo yaneh chami aleph. But if I want to have the real problem is that if I want to take on God, I can't get a day in court. You were saying that nobody's pure next to God, although we had two ways of understanding that, or one shouldn't take his court case to God. Saying, I know that, that's my problem. That's exactly my problem. God is up here, I'm down here, I got a problem, but there's nobody listening. It's like calling the CEO of Microsoft. He's not going to answer the phone. He's not there. We're not on the same...
He's not the only one.
What's that?
He's not the only one.
The next pasuk is the same thing. Chacham levav v'ami tchoach. Mi hiksha elav v'yishlam. Who could ask him a question v'yishlam and get paid back? I understand. That's exactly my problem, Eov is saying. Eov says, I don't know. It's not that I don't believe in God. It's not that I don't believe God is great. That's the problem, that God is too great, and I can't get a word in edgewise. That's exactly what he's going to say. So we'll pick this up. We'll do a little more Nevuchim, by the way, because more Nevuchim talks about the idea of why God does bad things to good people and vice versa. And he brings his Aristotle's point of view, and then he disagrees it with his own point of view. It's a fascinating disagreement. It's going to have to do with Eov's words. So we'll do about 10 or 15 psukim of Eov's words, give Eov his fair share, and then we'll take a look and see what the Rambam has to say on the issue of why.
Pesach, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, so there won't be Shir next week, so hold on tight.
The following week is already Yom Tov.
So it's Chol HaMoed.
It's not Chol HaMoed.
Yes.
Oh, right. that's Moshe Yom Tov Wednesday.
It's Tuesday night.
So you're all invited over to my house then for the second Seder. We can talk about Eob. It's a little bit of a downer for Pesach. So believe that the first Tuesday after the Chag. I wish you all a Chag Kasher Sameach.
Thank you.
I'll return that. I'll take it back to the room.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Good night.